tensions rise on the Korean Peninsula.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. North Korea has blocked South Korean worker access to an industrial zone along the border of the two countries. The Gaesong Industrial Complex was the last functioning crossing between the North and the South. The BBC's John Sudworth joins us from Seoul, South Korea, with the latest. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, first of all, how important is this industrial zone to the North economically to have it functioning with cooperation from both the South and the North?
Well, it's a small project, something like 100 or so factories there, but it does employ a large number of North Korean workers. Some estimates suggest that it brings North Korea about $80 million in revenue. Again, you know, in terms of a large scale economy, that doesn't sound a lot. But when you consider how impoverished North Korea is, it's money that probably matters. And cynics have suggested that over the years, even at times of deteriorating relations between the South and heightened tension, the North hasn't been willing to turn off that tap. It hasn't been willing to live up to its threats to close down this complex because that money is so important.
Now, the North did block access to this briefly back in 2009. What does this say about the tensions right now?
You're right. It was closed down temporarily back in 2009, again at another time of heightened tension between North and South. And I think some people would suggest that what we're seeing now is part of this pattern, this sort of cyclical process on the Korean Peninsula of raising tension and then negotiations to try to lower it again. And, you know, when they return to the negotiating table, if they do, it will be undone for a price. They will demand economic or diplomatic or security concessions for reopening Gaesong or closing down their nuclear complex. It's a pattern we've seen many times before.
The BBC's John Sudworth in Seoul, South Korea. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Jeremy. Thank you.
Well, a delegation from the International Monetary Fund arrived in Cairo, Egypt today for talks with the Egyptian government on a $4.8 billion loan. Egypt and the IMF struck a preliminary deal on the loan last November, but they can't seem to lock it in. Marketplace's Noel King explains why.
Egypt is running out of cash to import fuel.
Anywhere you go, you'll see a kind of queue to a petrol station at least half a mile long.
Farah Halim is editor of the blog Rebel Economy. She says a lot of Egyptians don't want the IMF's money because if they take it, Egypt will have to reform its energy subsidies. Egyptians worry that will push up the price of food and fuel. Remember what happened last time an Egyptian leader crossed his people? President Mohamed Morsi has been walking a fine line on the loan for months. The Century Foundation's Michael Wahid Hanna says things may finally be too bad to ignore.
We have heard over and over again that Egypt is in an economic crisis, that this cannot continue. But it does appear to be to have reached a different stage at the moment.
It's not clear how soon things will improve if the IMF loan is signed. It is clear that they won't improve if it isn't. I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, up 0.1% in Singapore, down 0.4% right now in London. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow added 89 points to close at another record high of 14,662.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Tax day is less than 2 weeks away, and for our Money Matters segment today, our senior producer of personal finance, Patty Hirsch, joins us with some tips to avoid an audit. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, so I know, Patty, that some people might be tempted maybe to tweak or make their returns look a little bit nicer so that they might get a bigger refund. What are the things that are going to attract the attention of the IRS and maybe even invite an audit?
Well, let's start with the things that are really easy to see, which are big round numbers with lots of zeros on the end, right? If you round stuff up to the nearest thousand,
not a good idea.
The IRS is going to look at it and it's going to think that's a made up number. And if there are a lot of numbers that look made up in your return, you can expect a phone call. Then there's another number that you write down, which is the stated income on your filing. So as you know, the IRS gets your 1099s and W-2.
Right.
So if what you write down doesn't match up with what they have, you can expect a knock on the door.
Okay, so don't round up your numbers and don't change the numbers that would have. I mean, that seems like pretty obvious stuff. What else?
It's like do your sums properly. Then the next big thing is the home office.
What, you can't have a home office?
Yeah, well, of course you can have a home office. And if you do, you should get a deduction for it. But the home office is one of the most abused deductions out there. So you want to be really meticulous when you're doing that paperwork. Keep all your receipts and proofs, all of that stuff. Another potential flag kind of related to home office is driving a lot for work. All right. And the other thing is unusual deductions that you would use, you know, for your home business or whatever it is. Now, you've probably heard stories about unusual deductions, like people claiming pole dancing lessons and plastic surgery. I mean, it gets even, believe me, there's a whole list.
And I assume that charitable deductions are ripe for abuse.
They certainly are. So big numbers for charitable deduction will attract attention. You know, the IRS is going to want to see receipts for donations greater than $250. It's worth taking photographs of the things when you give those to charity. But the biggest flag of all is probably the most inescapable. It's lots of money. All right, rich people simply get audited more than the poor do. Maybe that's because there's more return on the IRS investment when it audits a rich person.
They don't want to go after you if you're not going to be very valuable to them.
Right, exactly. You know, they want to get a return on their investment.
Patty Hirsch, senior producer of Personal Finance at Marketplace. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And finally, to a very expensive typo, Macy's sent out a catalog to customers earlier this month that had a $1,500 silver and gold necklace on sale for just $47. It was supposed to be $479. Some customers actually got to the store and bought the necklace before Macy's realized the mistake. The department store has since fixed the error, and I'm guessing there is an opening in the catalog department. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.